you're over 30. You might be struggling to get off the couch and get moving, or you might be hitting the gym but unsure what to do. We get it. But you need motivation, and you need to know the steps to take on your journey to fitness and health. You're listening to the 30 Plus Men's Fitness Podcast with your host, Coach Treggs.
All right. Okay, guys. So, good evening, good evening, good evening. As you come on, you may have seen a few tests flying around earlier. Facebook has now kind of like restricted the ability to just do live split screens. It used to be super easy. You used to just get like a, people could just request to join the video. But of course, Facebook doesn't like to make things easy for us. So we have, I've got a bit of technology called Ecamm. It's actually pretty cool. But the issue we had was trying to link it with Skype. But we're here. We're here. And I am here. I'm joined by my handsome, younger, Irish friend, Mr. Pat Davili. How are you, my man?
I'm good, Treggsy. I'm always happy when we get to catch up. We don't get to do it enough anymore, but yeah, it's good. I'm all good.
Excellent. So when we were just testing, my son John came in, who Pat actually held, and when he was about 6 months, when you stayed at my house and we were on a Phil Richards course. He's grown up a bit.
Wow, we're up. I feel like we live in a time warp sometimes. Time just disappears. It's crazy. I mean, I've known you for 7 or 8 years.
No, longer.
Is it longer?
I think I was in the first year of 30 Plus Boot Camp, and it's in my 10th year now. So, wow. Yeah, crazy stuff, mate. So listen, look, we've got an hour. Okay, we've got almost 100 viewers, which is amazing already. So, guys, leave a comment when you come on. There's one thing at the minute is I can't see the comments. I might just put. I don't want to get too distracted. We're good because we're gonna open up the Here we go. Evening. That's good. So we're gonna pull up the like the comments at the end and stuff like that. For those of you that like, let's say some of my clients don't know who Pat Davili is. Who are you? Who the bloody hell is Pat Davili? Apart from a young, handsome Irishman.
Who am I? I'll go through how I know you, Treggs, because that'll probably be a good way of putting
Take
it.
Him on the journey, buddy. Take him on the journey.
Say again?
Take him from the beginning, from the journey, mate. It's because it's been...
Okay. Yeah, I was... I've always wanted to be in fitness. That was always my passion since I was a kid. And so I pursued that after school, and I came out of college when the recession was at its worst in Ireland. So I think it was 2009. I had got a master's in nutrition, and I came out as a young man thinking, I think I thought the world owed me something. And so I expected to walk into a gym and have a master's in nutrition, just be able to, you know, get work with my clients. I thought it was going to be easy. And I had moved from Galway to Dublin. So Galway is on the west of Ireland. I moved to the capital wanting to become somebody. Definitely had a lot of ego as a young man that didn't believe in himself. I wanted other people to believe in me. I thought that would bring me confidence. And so struggling to get a business off the ground in Dublin, I was too stubborn to come back home with my tail between my legs having failed. But eventually I had to come back home. I fell into a depression just by fact of having failed so miserably and kind of publicly failed. All my friends had seen me fail, moved back in with my parents. Everyone had told me fitness wasn't going to work as a profession in Ireland. And this kind of was the, I don't know what the expression is, the nail in the coffin. I kind of had to come home, move back in with my parents, get work in a pizza shop. I was completely lost. And at that time, I reached out to you. And I reached out to a bunch of trainers. I just messaged a bunch of trainers. I said, you know, I see you guys doing it. Wales, England is not that far away from Ireland. Scotland's not that far away from Ireland. You guys are making it happen. How do I do the same? And you were one of the few, if not the only person to come back to me.
And well, Coach Treggs came back to you.
Coach Treggs.
What a guy. What a guy. Can I put Coach Treggs is a strong role model? Can I put that?
You came back and you said to me, I'll give you a call. You said, send me your number. I'll give you a call later on. And I'll be honest, at that time, I was so broke that I thought, this guy's fucking rich. I was like, this guy's going to ring me from Wales, long distance. And I just saw what you were up to. I saw you were going well. I saw you had a great niche. Now you were making a difference. You were living a nice lifestyle. And you rang me and you didn't tell me anything I didn't know. You just gave me energy that I didn't have. And you made me think I could do it. And so at that time, I started teaching outdoor boot camps here in Galway. I started with 5 clients. It kind of grew very quickly to 100 clients in a few months. A year in, I opened a gym. I brought out my first book. And then I started taking my courses online. And the long and the short of it was in 5 years, we went from 5 clients locally to 25,000 clients all over the world through online courses. Wrote a few books, raised $250,000 for local charities, built a school in Nepal, started doing TV and radio. A lot of stuff happened in a couple of years. And then about 3 years ago, I transitioned from fitness into personal development and leadership. And for the last couple of years, I've been speaking all over the world now, sharing ideas around living your best life. That's a horrible hashtag, but I mean, living authentically, living intentionally. Anything that's to do with, I suppose, I call it mental fitness. And the way I kind of frame it is that if I look after my physical fitness, I have a better chance with my physical health. You never know what's going to come. And in the same way, if I look after my mental fitness, I have a better chance with my mental health. At least that's been my experience. So I still struggle. I've struggled with anxiety since I was a teenager. It still comes, but stuff like journaling and meditation and breath work and simple practices help me kind of stay on top of things.
Because the thing is like you speaking, I mean, the reason we didn't go live yesterday is because you had a big seminar you didn't realize. And you speak in front of like 300, 400, 500 people. And for somebody who suffers with anxiety, that must be really tricky, buddy.
You know what, speaking was, I look at people like you that are very extroverted and very outgoing and full of energy, and I admire it. But I was always quite introvert and quite shy. And it was funny, when I grew this business, it was largely built online. And so I could hide behind the camera and hide behind the phone. And I had this personality online that, I've heard Joe Wicks is a bit similar, that when you meet Joe Wicks in person, he's quite quiet and he's kind of introverted. And so for me, I grew this big fake Facebook following of like 100,000 people a couple of years ago, and started getting offered speaking gigs. And I would turn up and people were like, is this the same guy? Because I was so shy and so scared of speaking. So that was definitely something I've had to work on. I've probably done 500 talks, I would say, in the last 5 years.
Wow.
Actually, realistically, at least 300, but between 300 and 500, somewhere in there. I've no idea. But the speaking is definitely something that did not come natural to me. People tell me I'm a natural now because I've done it so many times.
Sure.
I can tell you it was a massive fear. But it's massively rewarding. It's energizing.
So you transitioned. Obviously, I know your story. I'm just relaying it for the people that are listening. Some great numbers, by the way, guys. Keep giving us likes and shares. We've got 70 viewers. We will open it up for questions at the end. But I think, look, we could sit here and we could talk about fitness. But we're kind of coming at it from a different angle, really, because, you know, something that I'm very passionate about is mental health. I've always been very open with my story. I suffered with depression and anxiety in my late 20s. It subsequently led me into the fitness industry. And then when I, you know, got into health and fitness, making that a lifestyle, thankfully, my mental health has been great. But I'm aware of the signs. You know, I've got a business, I've got 2 young kids. When the kids were very young, we were in and out of hospital. We had poor sleep. And, you know, the old black dog did rear its head a little bit then. Because I'm slightly off topic, but if you don't get sleep, then that is torture. That's proper torture. And you know, when I don't get sleep, then that's when I go down. I think most parents of young kids will agree that. But something, you know, I've banged the drum of is talking, is making sure that you get outside, is it doesn't even always have to be getting outside and doing vigorous exercise, just getting outside and walking and talking. I lost one of my best mates, Mark, who helped me set up 30 Plus Men's Fitness back in 2012. Fortunately, he took his own life. So for years, I've kind of like banged the drum for busy over 30s men to try and just make some time for themselves, try and take a little bit of time out of every day to do something they enjoy. And it's kind of strange because a lot of guys, especially dads of young kids, they think they've got to go 100 miles an hour, provide, work all the hours, and they actually don't take any time for themselves. And I went through a little bit of a tough time when the kids were under 3 and actually went and had some CBT, with a therapist because I was just overwhelmed. You know, I'd gone from, when I met you, Pat, I'd gone from building a boot camp business, living on my own in an apartment down the bay, driving a sports car, dating every weekend, to meeting my partner, having kids quick, moving into a farmhouse, going VAT registered, taking on staff, and having about 10 times the outgoings. It was like, poof. I was like overwhelmed. And you know, one of the first things he said to me is he said, what do you do for yourself every day? And I said, oh, well, I go to the gym. I'm a coach. I love it. And he said, yeah, but that's work. What do you do for yourself every day? And I was like, well, I love my job. He's like, dude, that's work. You have got to do something for yourself every day. And it was the first time that I'd heard that. And it was just like, I was like, what? And he said, well, how can you serve from an empty vessel? How, if you're the provider and you're the father and you're the breadwinner, how can you serve from an empty vessel? And so I went away and I started to do things for myself. So tell me a little bit more about that whole concept. Because a lot of the guys I speak to, they almost have this guilt initially.
Yeah, I had the same, probably, actually, it's funny. When I met you, I was probably 23, 24. And I laughed because you used to be saying to me, when you're in your 30s, you don't recover as quick. And I'm like, give it another one. And now I'm in my 30s and I'm training with guys that are teenagers and in their 20s at jiu-jitsu. And I'm like, yeah, boys, when you grow up, you're going to find it harder.
Wait till you get in your 40s, dude. My knees. Anyway, carry on.
Probably 3 years ago when I had kind of ticked a lot of the boxes that I thought would make me happy, like buying a house and getting a car and building a business and being quote unquote successful and finding a missus, all these different things, I still felt I was struggling mentally and I couldn't get my head around it because I had everything I thought I wanted. And like that, I went to a psychiatrist and she told me I was going too fast. I was going a million miles an hour. I needed to get comfortable with slowing down. And she gave me this analogy, which I've been talking to people about since. And the analogy was, we all have fight or flight response. We have the stress response in the body that is there to protect us. It's there to protect us from actual danger as opposed to worry. But when we worry, we get the same response. In other words, if a tiger comes into the room, we get fight or flight response. We run away or we fight the tiger. But in the same way, if I go on Facebook and someone says something negative about me, I get that same response. If I get stuck in traffic, I get the same response. If my wife pisses me off, I get the same response. If I've got too much work on my plate, same response. And so it's chronic fight or flight response. It's always happening, always stressed. That affects my sleep. It makes me tired the next day. And the psychiatrist told me at the time that it's a bit like having a smoke alarm, in that the smoke alarm is amazing. If there's a fire in the house, it's going to save you. But if the smoke alarm goes every time you use the toaster, then you've got an issue. And she said, for us, the fight or flight is going all the time. So it's not serving us anymore. It's actually doing the opposite. So she suggested things like meditation and journaling. And like you say, taking time every day to do things you enjoy. And that's a really simple one, but it's profound in that most people live their life a bit like a before and after picture, in that they start and they say, I want to do a 12-week plan. I'll be miserable for the plan as long as I look good on day 90. And then maybe, if any of them get to that point, it's very hard to stay with something you're not enjoying. So yeah. Very few get to the end of 12 weeks. The ones that do might feel good for a heartbeat. And then they say, okay, what's next? And it's another 12 weeks. And it's deferring happiness. So something really simple for anyone listening is, I've done some stuff with Paul Mort recently, who I know you're going to have on soon.
Yeah.
Paul suggested, I'm not sure what book he came from, but it suggested the idea of listing a lot of things that make you happy. And having that to hand and making sure that every day you do something from the list. So I surf and I do jiu-jitsu and I do yoga. Those require me to go to places or make time. But I might say, okay, today I'm excited to go and do jiu-jitsu. Today I'm excited to go for a coffee. Today I'm excited to catch up with a friend. And the idea is, I'm going to ramble, but there's a book called Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. And it's one of the most powerful books ever. And he was in the concentration camps and looking at the people going through the hardest of hard times, like incredible hardship. And most of them were crumbling psychologically, mentally, physically. They were falling apart just from the horrible stuff they were going through. And the only people that were getting through the concentration camp and going through these horrendous hardships were the people that had a reason to get through it. So some people, their whole family had been killed. And they knew that if they didn't survive the concentration camp, no one would ever hear the story of how their kids or who their kids were.
Interesting.
Or they were musicians and they knew that if they didn't get through the concentration camp, they'd never get to pick up a guitar again. there was all these reasons for being. And when someone loses purpose in life or passion in life and hates their job or hates their life, it's because they don't see a reason for being anymore. The same as the people in the concentration camp that decide it's futile, it's hopeless. I've no control in my life anymore. I feel completely disempowered. And so a simple way of taking back some level of control is every day I do something that I enjoy.
Brilliant.
My thinking with that is I can be stressed. I can be struggling financially. My whole life can be falling apart. But if I put time in my day every day for something I enjoy, there's little bits of magic in there, and that starts to become.
Yeah.
That builds momentum, I think.
I want to elaborate on this, but quickly, we've had a question. Chris says, hi, Chris, by the way. Can you repeat the name of that book again, please, Pat?
Yeah, the book is called Man's Search for Meaning. It's by an Austrian psychiatrist called Viktor Frankl. His whole family were killed in the concentration camps. And like I say, his background was psychiatry or psychology. And he was just fascinated with why some people were able to endure. And he said something to the effect of, people can take everything from you, but the one thing they can't take is your ability to have perspective on a situation. In other words, how you react is within your control.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's on a very extreme level, but there's lessons in it for us all, I'm sure.
Here's something really interesting. You're talking there about reacting and things like that. It's so easy today, you know, we've got quite decent followings, and quite often somebody will say something and it's so easy to get triggered in kind of the whole social media. And you might put out a bit of content and people are like, oh, that's shit. Who do you think you are? And I'm sure you get it a lot. Here's something that I learned recently, and I love this. I love this analogy. And it's like, people's opinions of you, well, that's none of your business. And I love that. I absolutely love that. So if someone's got a bad opinion of me, that's none of my business. Why would I lose any sleep over that? And it almost, it just sets you free. And I've been following this life coach on Facebook, a guy called Kerwin Ray. I don't know if you've heard of him. He does a lot of stuff for parents and stuff like that. And he talks around, he talks about, like, if you go around with kind of like, you've almost got, some people just go around with their triggers just on their chest, and they're just so easy to get triggered. It's like you can just go up and just jab them. And it's about understanding that actually, if you haven't got those triggers out there on your chest, just learn to understand that if somebody's having a jab at you, that's down to them. Why would you lose sleep over somebody else's opinion of you or somebody digging you out? And it's very hard to. And I know Paul Moore, who I talk about, who I got on Friday, he talks a lot about this, because I've seen, I follow Paul and I've done his courses, and he's got his ads always pop up for his book, which is out. And some of the comments he gets on there is awful. And you're like, Mike, and then you can see sometimes he has a bite back. And he says it's so hard not to. Yeah, how have you managed sort of to kind of deal with that? Because, I mean, you've got a big following on all platforms, bud.
I think it's a couple of different things. I think number one is, when you're stressed, you're more reactive. So if I'm stressed and I'm tired, and I've had a hard week and I haven't looked after myself, and someone leaves a negative comment, that's very different to when I'm in a great state and I've just come from jiu-jitsu and I'm feeling good.
Oh, boom.
And so number one is, can I look after myself on a daily basis?
Love it.
I stop that from happening. And you also find, the more stressed you are, the more you tend to believe your own bullshit.
Yeah.
So if I believe nobody in the office likes me, when I'm stressed, I believe that. When I'm calm, I'm not attached to that thought. So I think that's one thing. Second thing, I would reflect on past experience. So I know for me, this might sound a little bit fluffy, but if I'm going to hate someone, that hate's got to come through me in order for me to project that outward.
Yeah.
If I love someone, the love comes through me. And so I'm expressing love, and I feel good when I express love. But I can't hate someone else, or I can't be angry at someone else without me experiencing the anger and the hate.
Yeah.
So it's that whole thing that I'm resenting the other person. There was a guy years ago here in Galway that gave me abuse for years online. He would tag all his friends and, I would delete him on all social medias. He just followed me around. He's a lawyer. He's got a real job. He's like a normal guy.
Yeah.
And the amount of headspace I let that take up, maybe he did it 20 times, but I probably replayed it 20,000 times in my head. And so it's recognizing that as well. You know, Are you being bullied? Are you being targeted? Or are you bullying yourself by replaying
interesting.
A million times? Yeah.
Yeah, I read a quote once. It's like letting somebody live rent-free in your head.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think number one is like looking after your own state is number one. Looking after your energy, trying to remain de-stressed. Meditation or Wim Hof, which we'll probably talk about, is really beneficial on that front. Yeah, I think those things are important. I think something that's kind of interesting with the whole dealing with criticism or feedback is that a lot of times when we're given criticism or feedback, the reason it stings is because there's some truth in it that we haven't accepted.
Sure.
And so
interesting.
You talk about the triggers on the chest that Kerwin Ray is talking about. There's a lady called Debbie Ford, and she talks about shadow work. And shadow work is the idea that most of us shut down half of who we are. We think we're supposed to be happy. We think we're supposed to be motivated, successful, excited, all these things all the time. And then we also have parts of ourselves like anger and guilt and shame and resentment and jealousy. And most of us don't want to accept that we are those things. And so we run away from it and we project onto other people. And so if I call you lazy and it stings, and you're like, oh, I'm not fucking lazy.
Yeah.
There's something unresolved in you in that point.
Yeah.
And you're allowing me to plug into this part. You know the plug sockets you have for kids? So you put the socket over the plug?
Sure.
If you make peace with all your traits, you're putting the plug sockets over and everything's fine. If you don't own those parts of yourself, then people are going to spend their life plugging into you and you're going to decide he's lazy. If you made peace with the fact you were lazy, you wouldn't care about anyone else.
I'm not
sure if I'm making sense on that.
No, I get it. Brilliant.
The analogy I used to use was if I call you a purple or if I call you a blue penguin or a purple polar bear, it's going to go in one ear and out the other. You don't care because it doesn't mean anything to you.
Yeah.
If I say you're kind of a jealous person and that triggers you, maybe there's something there. So sometimes there's magic in the criticism.
The magic's in the criticism.
Sometimes, I mean, feedback and criticism is a way of growing and learning.
Sure.
You get assholes online that are just going to say, oh, you're a dick. And you're like, there's no magic in that, I don't think. But if someone says, I mean, people used to criticize me a couple of years ago and some of the stuff they would have said was probably accurate at the time, but I didn't want to accept it.
Yeah.
You know, people saying, oh, you're just trying to become well known. And there was definitely truth in that looking back.
Yeah, I'm with you.
But it's stung to hear it, you know?
So I want to talk about meditation because this is an interesting one. And I'll be honest with you, this was something that I initially kind of laughed at. And I was just like, that no way meditation. But I did a Paul Mortz course last year, which is kind of like, it's not so much fitness based. It's just kind of, it's more of a life coaching. You're getting everything in order. We're going to talk on Friday. He looks at things called the five Fs, which is fitness, finance, family, fun, and focus, and trying to bring all those together. Because he thinks a lot of modern men maybe have, they got good finances, but then they're not spending enough time with their family. As an example, now it was Paul Mort that suggested meditation. And to be honest, it couldn't have come from anyone better because Paul is more lively than me. Okay. So my first reaction is there's no way I'm going to be able to shut off and relax. But when Paul Mort said he did it, I was like, well, if Paul can do it, then so can I. So I downloaded the Headspace app. And I sometimes, if I've got a couple of hours outside of clients, in the outside of the gym, because it's quieter there than at home, obviously with the 7 and a 5-year-old, I'll just put the seat back in the car and I will just listen to the Headspace app. And quite often I've just fall asleep and it's just amazing. And it really is like a revelation. And here's the thing. I speak to a lot of clients and I say, right, have you tried guided meditation? And they're kind of, their eyes glaze over and you go, no, listen to me. Have you given it more than 5 minutes, like one Thursday morning? Oh, well, I did try it, but I couldn't yet. You've tried it once. Give it a week, okay? And for me, just a lovely bit of time out, very calming music. I just like listen to the ones with the kind of background noise, not so much the commentary. And I just switch off and I'll do my kind of visualization. I'll do my gratitude. And like I said, a lot of the times, I'm gone. I'm catching flies. So what would you say for anyone that may, is kind of a skeptical about the kind of whole meditation thing?
There's two things that typically stop people. One is their expectations are too high as to what's going to happen. So I would say, number one, let go of any expectation. If you're just going to sit in silence for 10 minutes and nothing happens, that's perfectly fine. You're just pressing pause. So sometimes there's an expectation that I'm going to have amazing insights or an amazing experience, or I'm going to transcend. And people do it once and they're like, oh, nothing happened. So that's number one, let go of any expectation if you can, and just allow yourself for a certain period of time. If it's 30 days, that would be strong. 30 days, 10 minutes a day. The second thing is you don't see tangible progress. In other words, someone comes to you as a client and they do 5 push-ups today and they come back next week and they can do 6. They build confidence because they say, I'm getting a little bit better at this thing. But we can meditate every day for the rest of our lives and there's no way of seeing tangibly the difference it's making. But for me, the analogy I use is the kind of, when we used to have phones with the internet, when we first had phones with the internet, if you were connected to the internet, you could access any website you wanted. And then if you came offline, you could only access the stuff that was there before.
Yeah.
And for us, when we're busy and we're going on autopilot and I'm living the same day today as I was yesterday, and I'm just on the rabbit wheel or whatever the expression is, I can only access the ideas that I've had in the past. And I kind of call meditation going online. I'm checking in with whatever's out there,
yeah,
which is where new ideas, new insights, new perspectives come, yeah, from. And they don't come immediately. And then the last thing is, look, just find something that works for you. It doesn't have to be sat cross-legged under a tree.
No, no.
For me, Wim Hof breathing was what got me into meditation. That was my transition. A lot of men work well with Wim Hof.
Yeah,
because there's a little bit of challenge involved and a little bit of an anchor. So, yeah.
Well, what you said there is, yeah, I think a lot of people think, oh, meditation, you know, hippie under a tree. Like, I do it in my car with the heated seats on and just put the car back, the car back and just sit in the car park of the gym and just stick my earphones in. That's my guided meditation. I got a friend who does it, who's a fellow coach at the gym, and you just see him sat upright in his car outside. You know, you don't have to be, you know, sat in a field under a tree. It's really not like that, is it? So look, I want to come on to the whole Wim Hof thing, because this is something that interests me. I know you worked with him. I have a particular interest in it because I've got a client who absolutely swears by it. And he comes in and before every session, he's doing his, and he's holding his face and doing all this breathing. He's like evangelizing about his cold showers and everything like this. So tell us a little bit about, you can explain who Wim Hof is and what you learned from him and the kind of stuff that you did, because it's super, super interesting.
Sure. I'll stick a video in the comment section after for people that want to follow along and give it a go. Wim is a crazy Dutch guy who's known as the Iceman. He's got 26 Guinness World Records for cold immersion and climbing really high mountains just in his shorts. And he's basically redefining what's possible with science and with medicine. He's kind of gone against what they thought was possible. So as an example, he once was brought into a laboratory. They injected him with an endotoxin and he did his breath work and there was no change in his core temperature. He didn't get a fever. He didn't get any symptoms just through the breath. And they said to him, you're a freak of nature. And he said, give me any 10 people off the street. I'll train them for a week and they can do the same.
Wow.
And so he's shown people they can control your immune and autonomic nervous system using the breath. I heard about him years ago. I did his online course, a 10-week course. And then I decided to go and do a week with him in Poland at his house.
Wow.
And it was a couple of breathwork sessions a day for an hour at a time. And then cold immersion, getting in the ice, getting in frozen lakes and
so explain this, because we've got a lot of guys that do like Tough Mudder and there's a whole Arctic Enema and I always say, oh, you got to go and watch like Wim Hof online. So because I saw you doing it, I followed you, you're there in your trunks, like literally, yeah, getting through the ice and sit. I mean, what's that like?
So I did that and I did the SAS thing, the SAS boys that are on Channel 4 or whatever,
Ant Middleton.
And what's it called?
Was it Ant Middleton, his thing? Or
the other guy, Ali Aldridge.
Oh, yeah.
One of the guys who dares wins. Those two things were kind of similar for me. It was about, again, the anxiety piece, that when anxiety comes up for me, I want to run away from it. And I want to, like, I don't know what I want to do. But for me, the ice was, if I get in the water and everything in my body and everything in my mind is saying, get out of here, and I can make peace with the fact that I'm there and I can accept where I am and I can breathe and just get comfortable in the uncomfortable, that's a gift. And it was the same thing with the SAS stuff. They've got you in stress positions, your hands are over your head for a half an hour, you're standing on one leg, you've got them shouting in your face. And I was saying, if I can just breathe and know that if I focus on my breath, this will be over soon. That's a powerful thing for me with anxiety or social anxiety. So
what was it like in the ice? Because, I mean, I know having done like Europe's Toughest Mudder many times and gone in that Arctic enema, it doesn't get any easier.
Yeah, no, it's... I tell people it's a good analogy for scary things as well, in that you ask people, has anyone ever gotten the sea? And they'll say, yeah. And you say, did you want to get in before you got in? They'll say, no, not really. And then you say, did you feel really alive when you came out of that water? And they'll say, yeah. And it's kind of a lot of things, you know, you don't want to go and do the thing because it's scary, but you always feel more alive after. The ice is kind of the same. But to me, the ice is secondary to the breath. The ice is cool and everything else, and the cold showers makes you feel alive. But the breath is amazing. And it's just becoming conscious. You take your first breath when you're born. You take your last breath when you die. You take a lot of breaths in between, but a lot of the time we forget about it. And we think about when we're stressed, we breathe into our chest and we breathe very shallow. We tend to breathe through our mouth. When we're relaxed, and if you look at a baby breathe, a baby doesn't need a therapist because they haven't messed themselves up yet in the world.
Oh, sure, yeah.
A baby breathes through their nose, into their belly, and nice and slow and really deep into the belly. So Wim stuff is good. And then there's a guy local here who's world renowned. His name is Patrick McKeown. And Patrick's got a book called The Oxygen Advantage. Okay. And that's about how you breathe throughout the day.
Wow.
If anyone on the call snores, a lot of people can cure their snoring with this. You tape your mouth at night with medical tape, and that forces you to breathe through your nose. When you breathe through your nose, you tend to have a better sleep. You wake up with more energy. People should look at his stuff, The Oxygen Advantage. He was on London Real recently. Really good guy, Patrick McKeown. His stuff is interesting. So that came from a Russian doctor that was looking at people that were dying, and they were all mouth breathing. And he said, I wonder if they're mouth breathing because they're dying, or is the fact that they've mouth breathed all their life, is that what's made them sick? And if they breathe it through the nose, would they get healthy again? So
wow.
He says your mouth is for eating, your nose is for breathing.
Breathing. We're talking about taking breaths there. You take your first one when you're born, last one when you die. Dennis O'Loughlin, hope I got that right, having a real tough time with my mortality at the moment. Physically, I'm winning. Mentally, I'm dying inside. What can you recommend? Crystal says, great question. I think Dennis, one of my followers, I think he had a heart attack out of the blue recently. I'm sure he can confirm. So Dennis saying he's having a tough time with mortality. Anything you can recommend?
Some people, plant medicines, that's an interesting area for people. Working with a facilitator or a psychotherapist in a plant medicine environment. There's a book by Michael Pollan called How to Change Your Mind. That might be a route for some people. I'll do a lot of research on that first. Something for anyone who's, I think this will apply for anyone listening to the call. I spoke to a lady today whose husband, her husband got paralyzed 36 years ago. And she's had a tough life. She's been his carer for 36 years. And you know, she had a lot of struggles. And she was saying, you know, people are telling me to think positive, but like, is that the answer and everything else? I don't know what the answers to any of these questions are. I can only give perspective, but I often try to come up with what's in control and what's out of my control. So controllables and non-controllables. Most people in life focus on the uncontrollables. So they focus on the government and the royal family and the economy and the stuff that they can't control. And then they neglect the things that are in their control.
Mate, I absolutely love this. I absolutely love that. I'll just jump in there because you see that there was a stat released, and it was like the amount of people that are killed in a terrorist attack in comparison to the amount of people that die each year through poor health. And it's like, you know, you can sit there and you can, you know, watch the news and start spouting on Facebook about, oh no, the news, the royal family, this, that, Brexit. And you just sat there like not making your health and fitness a priority and eating junk food. Do you know what I mean? We're going slightly off topic, but I love that. Control the controllables. Most people are worried about stuff they got no control over.
That's a kind of stoic philosophy, but it's an interesting one, and it can come into all, you know, everything. Again, with the economy, I can either say the economy's here and I can't make any money, or I can say, right, what is in my control with my health? Another one for, I think it was Dennis. I don't know if the names are in front of me. There's a book called The Five Regrets of the Dying by Bronnie Ware.
The Five Regrets of the Dying, Dennis, is a book. Five Regrets of the Dying.
So this lady was a palliative care nurse. She spent maybe 30 years with people coming into their last months and weeks. And she chronicled what were the five most common regrets that everybody had as they came toward death. And that might be something that if you can look at those and you can kind of make peace with those things and you can work on those things. People talked about how they wish they'd worked a little bit less, spent more time with friends and family. The biggest one was, I wish I'd lived a life for me rather than the life that others expected of me. So that's a really powerful book for anyone.
This is a really interesting one. I shared something last night, and it was just an image that somebody shared, and it was just saying about, like, you know, life expectancy is a certain age. We work until here, we retire. That gives us 11 years. And like, about start living now. And I think we talk about, you were saying at the start, you know, some people do like a 12-week plan and go, oh, I'll be happy when I get this. Something that I've really got to grips with over the years, and, you know, at the grand old age of 41, is enjoying the journey and just enjoying every day. I remember there was somebody I studied with. We both studied with him, I think, many years ago, a guy called Travis Jones, and he said he had us to design your perfect day. And he said, right, that doesn't just mean sat on a beach sipping cocktails, because even that would get boring over time. So what does your perfect day look like? And I have done a lot of work with that, and I'm very lucky. I love what I do. But again, you know, I coach. That wasn't handed to me. That was a decision I made at 27 to do a career change and go and do something I enjoyed. And I love being around people. I love being able to get up and do the school run. I love being able to go for a run. I love being able to get involved with my kids' coaching. So I enjoy every day, and I'm very grateful and I'm very lucky, but I created that luck. And I see a lot of people, they're posting and they're kind of like, oh, only a year now until my next holiday. I can't wait, because they don't like their job. And you're going, you're wishing away like 365 days of your life. Like, we live in a world now where there is so much opportunity. You know, we got this thing called the internet, where you know you can go and find stuff that might interest you. You know you can find stuff online, courses online, jobs online. You know, I remember back in good old 2006, we had Google then. I found a personal training course. It was quite simple. And I think that too many people are just kind of acceptant of a kind of a life that they're not too happy with, just because they think, well, I've got to make it to retirement. What's your thoughts on that, bud?
I think the biggest thing, I mean, career and family are the two areas where people feel very stuck, in that there's the idea, I can't change who I am because I've got all these responsibilities. And I think it's important. I look at it as the alphabet, A to Z. I am at A. First thing I need to do is figure out, what does Z look like? What's the end picture? So as you say, the perfect day is a great exercise.
Yeah.
But, you know, I ask questions like, you know, if I was to meet you 5 years from now and everything had worked out really well, where would you be in
Love
an ideal
it.
World?
Yeah, that's from Jack Canfield, isn't it? The Success Principles, yeah?
Yeah, it gives us a roadmap, and then we can work backward. But what's important is, you know, a lot of people will shut down the idea that they can make a career change because they've been there for 20 years or yep. They have to pay the mortgage or whatever it is. You don't need to jump from A to Z. You just need to get to B. And B could be,
love it,
this week I'm going to research some evening courses, and that's my next step. And that gives me confidence because I've done something in direction. Me researching a course might be more progress with my career than I've had in 20 years because I've been stuck at something. And so it's about those baby steps. And then my next, okay, sign up to the night course, do that, take on some free clients. And who knows, maybe a year from now you can jump ship.
Yeah.
Or maybe you decide having this passion project on the side is all that I needed, and I'm actually not in a bad position in my work. My work's not
bad. I want to kind of jump in on that, because if we're talking about, you know, I'm always, you know, this is great because it's not just about health and fitness, but, you know, I say this a lot. If you're not happy, you do have the power to change it. And I can tell you this now. When I was in my mid to late 20s, I was lost. I was lost. I was lost. I was lost. And people say to me, you know, Treggs, what are you going to do? And I was a courier for a living, which was not for me. It's a good thing for some. It just wasn't for me. And I was waiting. I was waiting. I was waiting. And then I had my eureka moment. I was doing a 10K race in Butte Park in Cardiff. And I was like, I'm going to be a personal trainer. I was an ex-nightclub promoter, like, who just liked running. And I remember telling close friends, and they went, oh, no, a friend tried that. No, you've got to be in better shape, this, that, all that. And I said, do you know what? I said, I don't care if it takes me 2 years to make this to go full time. I was 27, all right, didn't have kids, but I still had bills to pay. I was living with a partner. I'm going to do this. And I think the people's first reaction is can't afford, it's a court. There's ways around everything. I always say this to my coaches, you'll find a way or you'll find an excuse. And I just went online. I found a course. I was able to do a part payment plan over the year. And it is like you said, I just got started. It took me a year to get qualified because I took my time and had a lot of anxiety over it. And I remember I just started to coach on a weekend. I would train people for free. Then I would do some flyer drops and I got a few more people. Then I had a website. And then all of a sudden, after 8 months, I was doing it full time. And I remember doing my course and I remember being so anxious. And I walked in and I hadn't slept the night before. I was like, everyone's going to be 18. Everyone's going to be ripped. You know, everyone's going to be younger than me. And I walked in and there was people from all walks of life, all ages, shapes and sizes, guys in their 50s that have had a heart attack and just wanted to retrain and get into the fitness industry. And straight away, I was like, wow. And I think a lot of the time we build this perception in our head of can't do that because this X, it's just a story you're telling yourself, right?
Yeah. And it's trying to take too big a step. I mean, you can get anywhere, but you got to go one step at a time. And, you know, I talk about recently, I took up surfing maybe 6 months ago and I'd spent 10 years thinking about surfing. And then I went for my first surf lesson and someday I'm going to be really good at it. And people are going to say, wow, he's a natural. But the reality was my first surf lesson, I was with a bunch of 10-year-olds. I had to join them for a surf lesson. I go down to the beach carrying my surfboard surrounded by 10-year-olds. And I meet everybody that I know and they're like, oh, you teach in a surf class? I'm like, yeah. I spent 2 hours trying to get up on a board the size of my house. Eventually get up, get sunburnt. I end up doing this when I get up on the board thinking I'm cool. it was a shit show, but that 2 hour lesson was so much more productive than 10 years thinking about doing something. Amazing. You've got to just take a step. It's the whole spiral staircase analogy. You can't see 10 steps ahead, but if you keep stepping, the next step will appear. Or, you know, it's the GPS. If I know the destination at the end, I don't need all the directions at once. The GPS is going to say, drive 100 meters. And then when you do that first thing, then it says, turn left. And then you do that and that and that and that and that. But yeah, the steps only appear as you step forward, I think.
I love it. Right, Pat, I know we're going to do about another 7 to 10 minutes, guys, okay? Because Pat's got a call at 7. Hopefully you've gotten some great vibe, got some great numbers. We really appreciate the likes and the shares. Let's get to some questions, okay? So Joey says, how do I get rid of my FUPA? F-U-P-A. What's FUPA?
Is it fear of what other people think?
Possibly. No. I don't know. Joey, elaborate on that.
What is it? F-U-P-A?
F-U-P-A, yeah. Hope it's nothing rude, Joey. Not being told, are we? Guys, get some questions in now while we've got sort of 5, 6, 10 minutes. We had so much trouble trying to get this live, but it's worked out brilliant. One thing I want to say as well, guys, while we get a few more questions in, is we're talking about technology here. Okay, Chris is saying gadgets, apps, and all that. Listen, I love social media. I've made a great living out of going online and using Facebook groups, as has Pat. It's allowed me to connect with the world, build an audience and give my family a great life. But yes, there is so much technology. One little thing I started to do last year and I've continued to do it this year is there's this crazy thing called airplane mode, which you can leave your phone on, okay, until you are until you're ready to get on it. And I did this on my 40th birthday. I had this vision, sorry, on my 41st, had this vision of waking up on my birthday. I had the day off, waking up with the kids and doing the school run and then going for a run with my music on, all before turning my phone on. How about that? On your birthday, all right? Because actually, I know we all want to see who's wishes a happy birthday, but the people that mean the most to me are right there under my roof, right? And it was amazing. I woke up with the kids. I left the phone in the bedroom. I opened my present, took them into school. I went for a fantastic run in the rain. And by the time I turned my phone on, I was in this great energy. I was so grateful to be alive. I'd just done like a 15K run on my birthday. I was happy for health and that. And then when the messages come in, it was great. But nothing nothing. I didn't give my attention to anything else. And I use this a lot now. So, you know, it's going to be the same for you, Pat, right? Isn't it? The minute you turn your phone on, WhatsApp, boom, Facebook, Instagram, everything. That's just the age we live in. And sometimes, and I've learned this, I mean, my eyesight isn't great in the morning, right? So there's a sign of age. My eyesight's not great in the morning. So sometimes I'll be like, you're looking at your phone and you're like, all these messages, like, what am I doing? I can't even see at the minute. Just leave it on airplane. Go and do your thing first. So quite often now, about 2 or 3 times a week, the phone stays on airplane. I do my exercise. I have my shower, get ready. And then all of a sudden I turn it on and I'm in so much better headspace to deal with everything. Do you do anything like that, bud?
You know what? I should improve in this area. I'm trying to do digital detox at the moment. So there's kind of 3 stipulations I've come up with. I haven't been so good on this. I need to improve for sure. But no screens in bed, email once a day, and 30-minute social media cap. That's my kind of parameters.
Wow.
You know, I need to improve.
Wow.
I've been overdoing the 30 minutes a day and the email. But I'd be good for getting the screens out of the bed, because that's that definitely affects your sleep.
Yeah.
And I was reading or listening to what's the guy's name? I think it's Johan Harry or something to that effect. He's got a book called Lost Connections. It's about disconnected to society and depression. And there's a scale that he mentions. I think it's called the Hamilton scale, which goes from 0 to 51. It's a scale for measuring depression and rates of depression. Going from 0, I think, perfectly happy, 51, I'm the worst place I could ever be. And they found that people that were on antidepressants were getting a rise of 1.8 on the scale. So they were moving up by 1.8 or whichever direction, becoming 1.8 happier. People that improved their sleep pattern were going up by 6 points.
Wow.
It's kind of crazy to think 3 times more effective in that study. That's how important sleep can be.
Sleep, sleep is a whole new subject to go down. Pat, we're going to have to go soon. I'm just going to handpick a few questions because I know you've got a call you've got to get prepared for. Marianne Healy says, somebody asked earlier, Pat's top 5 books.
My favorite book ever is a book called The Strangest Secret by Earl Nightingale. The Strangest Secret. Viktor Frankl, I mentioned, is A Man's Search for Meaning. Really powerful book.
What about this one?
Yeah.
Always with me.
Is strong. so many. I'm looking here at the bookshelf. Conversations with God is a really good book. It's not religious. It's spiritual. 7 Habits Highly Effective People. There's so many books. 7 Habits Highly Effective People is a good book too. So Conversations with God, 7 Habits Highly Effective People, Man's Search for Meaning, Think and Grow Rich, and The Strangest Secret.
Brilliant. Okay. Pat, it has been absolutely brilliant having you on. It's lovely to see you. Obviously, me and you are great buddies anyway, irrespective of the kind of whole fitness connection. So it's good to see you, mate. I'm going to come over soon, or you come over here and we'll hang out, mate.
I would love to.
I really, really appreciate your time because I know you're busy. I know you're like a big cheese now over in Ireland. You get selfies everywhere you go. But no, I really, really appreciate your time, mate. You're a great guy. And I think we've given some great value. We've had a lot of viewers. We've had a lot of likes and shares. I appreciate you all. Thank you for joining in, guys. Pat's got to go because he's got a call now tonight. And I'm going to go and I think I'm going to have a Corona because that went really well. All right. So guys, thank you very much for joining. Pat, we'll talk on WhatsApp tomorrow, mate. You go and do your thing, buddy, all right? Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate your time. Cheers, guys.
You've been listening to 30 Plus Men's Fitness. You can find us by searching 30 Plus Men's Fitness on Facebook or by visiting 30plusmensfitness.com. You've taken the first step to getting fit and healthy. We'll see you next time.